episode 26.
Hey everybody, welcome to Into the 99, where we have 99 cards, because Commander is number one. I am one of your hosts, Sherman.
I'm Hope.
I'm Daniel, and we have a guest with us today.
Hi, I'm George.
Hello, George! And today's episode...
George, Jorge, whatever you want to call
it. Whatever you guys are into.
So today we're going to talk about Merrin for...
Merrin of Clan Nel'Toth.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, just with Merrin coming out as one of the...
Secret Lair
ones we just talked about. She's such an exciting card for Commander. As we said last episode, she's designed for Commander. She's not something you'd put into a deck because... It'd be horrible.
That would be crazy. Don't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, do whatever you want, but like...
Very popular. She skyrocketed to, in terms of the commanders that were released in this series involving the experience counters, I think she was one of the top clear choices that everybody
Oh, yeah.
Everybody was
Well, and then
her.
For me, because I didn't play Magic in 2015, for me, with her coming back out with the in the anthology, bringing that deck back, it gave me an opportunity to like...
Play her again.
Yeah.
Well, like, in the, even when, like, before the anthology, like, Merrin was, like, what, $30, $40?
Yeah, so, I think she still commands a pretty good price, though.
I think she's still at $12, pricey. $13, something like that.
Probably something like that, or maybe even $20. Who knows, right?
For everyone that doesn't know the section we're talking about, in 2015, the Commander decks all had experience counters as their ability on the Planeswalker, and all of it was when X action happens... The player gets an experience counter, not the creature.
Yeah, and these are counters that are off of the board. They're not interactable. They're not something you
can power conduit with or anything like that.
It's like, these are counters just to represent how many are there, and they stick into the
game. It is just like an emblem.
Yeah.
You can't interact with them. You can't get rid of them. They don't... Thief of Blood doesn't take them. Like, nothing.
I think Sun Cleanser does, because it's target player removes all counters. Target player loses all counters. I think
that
Sun Cleanser
would. That would be an interesting thing to check into.
Yeah,
for sure.
but generally,
but yeah, the idea
you can't. I guess you can interact with them because you can proliferate them.
Yeah, you can proliferate.
True,
them.
but they're extremely difficult to remove. The removal of them is pretty
That's the
difficult.
Point.
Yeah.
Once they're there, they're pretty much there. And
yeah,
that's kind of where the value comes.
You remove the creature, the experience counters remain.
It's not like a Voltron strategy where you get rid of my Tuvasa. Suddenly, I don't have that strong creature anymore. This is when you put X creature back out, they were all there. And I think it was Daxos was one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Daxos one. There's Mizzix.
Yeah, Mizzix for spells, instances,
Mizzix
sorceries.
Mizzix is Magnus, yeah.
Azuri, which is a really fun one, the Claw of Progress, and then Merrin.
Yeah.
And then there was also a Giant, which I made the mistake of buying that one back in my early Magic career instead of Merrin. I'm kicking myself now. buying Merrin, but Kalem.
Yeah.
She was a red-white Giant with double strikes.
So yeah, whenever you cast a creature four,
great. At the time, I was vibing really hard on a 60-card Boros Giants deck, so I was like, oh, I'll just make this into an EDH deck. It'll smash people with Giants, yeah.
when you're
that big, people, they don't like you.
We have that deck. It's actually a very fun
It's so much fun to play, right? I still have it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Merrin here real quick.
Yeah, so again, Merrin was one of the strong women characters that they decided to put out for the Women's Day. Mm-hmm. And she is actually a pretty awesome character, both lore-wise and physical card-wise. Like, she is a powerhouse.
Yeah,
she is strong.
So she's a 2 black and a green for whenever another creature you control dies, you get an experience counter. And then at the beginning of your end step, you can choose a target creature card in your graveyard, and if the card CMC is less than the number of experience counters you have, equal to or less, then you can put it onto the battlefield, and if it's more than that, you can put it into your hand, which is something that people always seem to forget.
Yeah. That second part is that it doesn't need to be something you can afford with your experience counters. If you don't necessarily want it, or you can't get it on the battlefield yet, but you know you want it later in the game, you can still just pick something else.
Or you know that you have the mana to cast it next turn.
Bingo.
Yeah.
So,
or if you have Flash, you're like, boom!
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. Like, and being green, like, it's very possible to get Flash.
Yeah.
So
like, oh, Merrin's so strong. It is, yeah, it's 3-4.
And to that end, also, yes, she's a 3-4, so she's not super squishy.
Yeah, she's not weak.
Yeah, she's definitely not the worst in terms of being a body as well. Yeah. At the 4 mana level, that's pretty reasonable, especially with other things tacked on there.
Totally.
Now, obviously,
put some boots on her.
Whenever you see the words... Whenever another creature you control dies, you can get a pretty big cue as to how a lot of people play these kinds of commanders.
Totally. Well, if you didn't play it that way, you can do you, but that would be crazy.
This is a popular strategy in Magic we all call aristocrats.
Yeah. So there's so many ways of building around Merrin. Mm-hmm. Everyone has their main strategies that they enjoy or whatever. Like, you know, we were talking about this earlier. I would do a really, really jank strategy with this.
Totally.
But that's beside the point. Most people, when they see Meryn, off the bat, you're looking at sacrifice.
Totally.
Hands down.
Which is exactly what I did. I went pretty straightforward, but like really, really heavy bonks. So, as I am wont to do. So, yeah, everybody knows that at this point.
Hope's a simple woman.
I'm a simple girl. Well, you get the polarity
of having low-cost creatures that you can constantly keep casting and sacrificing to ramp up those counters. And then you have tons
bring up
of
big
bonky
boys. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Which is awesome.
Who keep coming back for free.
Well, and essentially, like, it allows for a really intense reanimation deck without having to run reanimator cards.
Yeah, you don't need a suite of like all the different reanimator spells all at once, right? You can have just a couple in there as redundancy. Yeah.
It's kind of like what I like about Muldrotha. Yes, you could run the reanimate stuff in it, but it's not really necessary. You can still just cast them from the grave. It gives you also that extra resource of the grave that we always talk about.
Yeah.
Because your grave is suddenly just an extension of your hand. You're not as affected by discarding cards. Someone makes you throw something out, that's fine. You can get it back later on.
I always discard strategically. If I have to discard, I discard something with a high CMC so I can get it back later.
Yeah. You'll discard something that's just got a great effect in the graveyard, like a filth, something along that line.
Yeah, something with value. Block,
right? Well, black does also have madness things too, right? So
So there's potential to go down that route also, which is another nice option.
There's I always forget what it is, but it's one of the green cards with madness, and it's madness is zero. If you discard it, it's zero cost. I like that one.
There's a couple of those, actually. There's a black one, too, called Call from the Netherworld.
Oh, there is a black one?
Yeah, you toss it. It's usually one to cast. Otherwise, when you cast it for its madness cost for zero, you get a zero cost to return a black creature from your graveyard to your hand. Fantastic. I use it in my Kroxa deck all the time.
So that good. Is a dope card.
So fantastic.
Oh, because it can actually hit Kroxa.
Exactly, right? And you can just toss them back from your hand, resack them again.
That's smart.
But that's a whole other thing, right? Yeah, the nice part about not having to run recursion spells like, reanimate, Dread Return, Animate Dead, is that you can now use those card slots on things to protect Meryn.
Yeah.
Because the number one problem you're going to run into is when people see Meryn's ability, she starts doing a few sacrifices, people are going to start targeting you.
Honestly,
so you want to make sure she's not hurt.
In a lot of games, Meryn isn't problematic at the one or two experience counters. People are saving their removal and
she's
stuff.
She's problematic at eight.
Well, but honestly, it's once she starts hitting four, in my opinion, that people start to realize, we should not have ignored this, and now we collectively can no longer
ignore
it.
Because you have to get rid of the commander now, because you can't get rid of my counters. Yeah.
It snowballs very fast.
Yeah. Especially when you're sacrificing and recurring like little guys, you know.
Yep.
I would start worrying at three, because you have a lot of creatures like Fleshbag Marauder and stuff like that, like you come back and you just like constantly like mini warp board wipe, everything, right?
In many decks with these strategies, those are almost always included for me. Fleshbag Marauder, Merciless Executioner.
Yeah.
There is a third one at the 3-mana level, I believe.
I can't remember what one, but yes. That paired with the fact that like any black deck at 4-mana plus can be dropping Grave Pact makes it terrifying to have those cards recurred.
Yeah, exactly.
A Fleshbag Marauder turns into a 3-drop, everyone sacks two creatures is real strong.
And then at 5, you get Gary out, and then, But the key thing here is, as you said, George, you know, like, you don't have to worry about, like, the spells, like, reanimate, Soul Exchange, stuff like that.
Yeah, like, so I think I only run one, like, typical, quote-unquote, reanimation spell, and that's Victimized, but that's because it gives me the double
There's
stack.
Also Diabolic Servitude in here.
Yeah.
But that's kind of more
that's
of
a... That's
a
little different.
It's a more useful effect than just your straights, kind of a... return a dude from the...
Yeah, it's a different kind of thing, because you enchant the creature, you get it until it dies, and then you get Diabolic Servitude back, and the creature's exiled.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun, because then you can do it again, if you want to. It's not like a single-use, like a one-shot kind of reanimation.
Yeah.
So...
Every time
there's more utility.
Every time I look at this deck list, I want to put Recurring Nightmare in it, and then I remember that Recurring Nightmare's banned for a very good reason.
Yes.
Very good reason. Yeah.
But it does never change that I want it.
Now, one thing that's a really good point to mention with these sacrifice triggers, when you are doing this kind of a strategy where you're trying to sack things at instant speed, something you want to really keep in mind is that they don't cost mana for those abilities.
Yeah.
You'll notice that a lot of the cards in our deck here have just sacrifice a creature, colon, effect.
Yeah.
If you have even one mana in front of there with this kind of a deck where you're trying to do these things over and over and over again in one turn, it's that one mana can really start to wear down on your mana cost, especially if it's colored. So you'll notice there's a lot of engines here where it's just sacrifice a creature at instant speed, do something.
Yeah. So, like, obviously, there's, like, common things that you always hear people talk about, like Secure Tribe Elder, Spore Frog, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But there's other things. And remember, like, you don't have to just have the creature itself say, sacrifice this creature. You can always have other creatures saying, like, sacrifice a creature, and this creature gets, like, I don't know, a plus one or something like that. Who knows? Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. Doesn't matter. Some of the good examples in this deck include the Blood Baron, Jarad.
Yeah.
Uzoni.
I'm gonna talk about
he's
him
the
later.
Man, right?
He's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's one of the sleepers in this deck for sure.
Absolutely. What does he do? Just in case, because that's not a common one.
Yeah, this one's kind of a little back from the Return to Ravnica days.
Yeah,
but he's the man.
Jarad Golgarilich. Sherman, can you read it? Hope can't.
I can't see the exact.
Yeah,
text,
no problem.
And I don't want to get it wrong.
It is a black green green for a 2/2 zombie elf. That's so much fun.
What
zombie
a great
elf.
Tribe, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. So it will get a +1/+1 for each creature card in your graveyard. Okay, only yours.
Which makes him huge.
A lot of people forget that effect of him. Like, they're looking at the lower effects that we're about to talk about.
Yeah.
But he gets
big fast.
Yeah. Late game so dropping like a 20/20 four mana creature is terrifying.
That's that's usually how it goes for me, as I usually don't end up actually playing him until like
later.
Very late into the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So his ability that most people look at is you pay one black green, you sacrifice another creature. Each opponent loses life equal to the sacrificed creature's power. All right? Which is disgusting, because especially if you have like a bunch of pump spells, or like let's say you sacrifice an Eldrazi because you have an Eldrazi in there for some stupid reason. That's like a 10/10.
What about like if you just have Mykoloth? Like you play something like
I'm gonna remove that from the deck list right now. So
you play something like Open the Graves. You have all these zombies out. You beat them all with Mykoloth, then you sack Mykoloth to Jarad.
Yeah. Ew.
Done.
Ew.
I've never done that.
Well, in green, there's also just such monster creatures, the same as black, like
the Grey Worm.
Obviously, a good card to include in any deck that's black and wants creatures that you don't care about. It's Grave Titan, the enter the battlefield ability to get zombies. And just even being able to sack it for 6 damage to each player, knowing that you can recur it and get your extra value bringing it back, it's really strong.
Yeah.
Pretty nasty.
And Marin does it best of all.
Yeah. Well, actually, one that I've done personally is a card that I just saw Daniel pull up on his screen here. But it's sacking the Lord of Extinction.
Yes.
Late game with Jarad.
Why do I play with you guys again?
I've never done it to you.
True. I guess that's why we still play.
Yeah.
Well, an interesting thing about this as well is it's not inconvenienced by a lot of disruption kind of stuff.
Yeah.
True.
Like, discard isn't going to hurt this deck
as
much.
As badly, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the same with Mel.
Yeah.
It's half value because you want it to die off the battlefield if you can help it.
But having
it go in the graveyard is still good.
Well, the other thing too, though, is like mill doesn't super affect this. All they're doing, it's basically allowing you to just have extra card draw.
Yeah,
with the frequency that you're going to be hitting.
Yes.
There's not many not creature cards in the deck.
But here's the thing. We're not even done talking about your boy.
Yeah, because he has one more ability.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
That is also another thing people forget, that he just has too many things.
You can get rid of him.
That's
fine.
Many things. Yeah, you can get rid of him. But then his last ability is you sacrifice a swamp and a forest. Return him from the graveyard to your hand.
Simple. Just sack a bio, you're good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what makes this great with Mara...
Oh, yeah. Simple. Super simple.
Most other decks, what they're going to have to do... And, I mean, even if you were running Jarad as your commander, what you're going to do is you're going to pop a massive creature like a Lord of Extinction or something relying on how many cards are in your graveyard. Do a bunch of life to somebody. But the problem with other decks is that you're going to have to pay for a spell to get it back, get it into your hand. You're gonna have to put Jarad back out. You're gonna have to refill everything. You're gonna have to start doing it again. Whereas Marin, let's say you got your Lord of Extinction in the graveyard there. You just popped him with Jarad, made somebody lose a whole bunch of life.
Mm-hmm.
Marin, if you have enough experience counters going, well, no worries. That thing's coming right back. You're gonna pop it again.
Yeah,
right back. You're gonna pop it again.
You literally do it like in the end step.
Yeah.
Late game, he is just so monstrous that he is going to be an instant target. For anyone who actually understands what he does, he is a Path to Exile target for sure.
Every single time.
In fairness, though, everything in this death is a path to exile target. You don't want to go into the graveyard.
Yeah.
Well, I just saw, like you guys have a Izzoni in here, too. Yeah.
That was a recent ad, obviously, but...
And that Izzoni is so, so strong. So, like, I'm going to talk about Izzoni real fast, because it is a great ad in a Marin deck, okay? It's a 2BB green, okay? Elf Shaman. Elf again. Yay. For 2/3. It has Undergrowth. When Izzoni enters the battlefield, okay, so ETB, create a 1/1 black and green insect token for each creature card in your graveyard. And then you can play a black and a green and sacrifice another creature, gain one life, and draw a card.
Right.
So you're getting card advantage, you're creating a bunch of stuff.
You're getting boys, you have blockers or bonkers, whatever you want. And you have fodder for your Mykoloth.
Well, having those 1/1 chumps that can block but also give you an experience counter on death makes them
tokens still hit the graveyard. Yo.
Well, and the other thing too is you can just swing at them. Like, people either have to take just a large amount of one chip damage every turn, or they're going to have to help pump up those experience counters.
I am happy either way.
Or throw in Triumph of the Horde and just be nasty.
This is also a key part
of a sacrifice strategy
that you need to think about, is that there needs to be things to sacrifice. Yep. So you don't always necessarily want to fill the whole deck with all effects have sac effects on them.
Yeah.
You need a few things that feed some ammo to that sac effect that isn't real bodies.
Well, yeah, because you don't want a Phyrexian Altar is a great card when there's creatures.
Yeah,
yeah, well, exactly.
That's why, like, even on the screen right now, like, I can see, like I said, an enchantment that I mentioned already, which is open the grave, so it's whenever a non-token creature you control dies, you create a 2/2 black zombie.
Exactly.
Which is like, you're killing your creatures anyway, so then you make these zombies and then you've got a little bit of like wiggle room almost.
Yeah.
And those are nice things to sack. You're not like, those are nice things to sack for an Ashnod's or whatever. Right?
Yeah, things you don't really want to lose, but you want to sack for value. Like, in my Yawgmoth deck, I do very similar combos to this. One other creature I can mention that does something very similar to Izzoni, Endrixar, Master Breeder.
Yeah.
Whenever you play a creature spell, put X black 1/1 thralls into play, where X is the converted spell, the spell's converted mana cost.
Yeah.
So you can basically just pop creatures and keep turning them into thralls. As long as you don't get too many thralls, you don't sack the guy. Similar thing with Izzoni, right? You can keep popping in some insects to sack.
Yeah. It's awesome.
I want to bring up one thing here.
Hit me.
So as we're talking about these things, we're talking about like how strong all these cards are. Keep in mind, for our listeners out there, keep in mind, okay, this is one of the big problems with Marin, okay? As you're playing these cards, you become a huge target.
Heck yeah.
So be careful when you're playing these cards.
Timing is key.
Timing is everything.
Because you can dump all this stuff in. Just because you can doesn't mean that it's the right moment.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of times when I play Marin that I just sit and I stew and I sandbag. Yeah. And I wait until just the right moment. Like, I'm not going to drop the Phage Emblem Vraska.
Yep.
Just because.
Yeah. Because, like,
you know, like, it's just, I'm going to hold.
Yeah.
Until I can, protect it with my tiny little bugs.
Well, more experienced players as well that, like, do understand that the graveyard is a resource are not going to let sacrifice outlets sit on the board.
No, yeah. They're instantly gone.
A Soul Ring versus, like, a Phyrexian Altar or Ashnod's Altar out.
It's gone.
Those are the targets, right? Yeah. And that's going to...
Skull Clamp, whatever.
I'm not allowing it.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of those things that are going to let you get those experience counters, people aren't going to just let sit on the board. No. So you have to be ready to use them when they're coming out. You at least want a little value.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, and you got to be... And because of that, you got to be careful. So sometimes, like, you got to play certain cards that kind of work with your strategy but aren't as powerful, or people can look at them and like, yeah, okay, you know, like you guys don't have Desecrated Tomb, and I'm like, okay, that's kind of a good thing, because Desecrated Tomb says like anytime a card leaves your graveyard, or was it a creature? Only I think it's only creature cards that leave.
That's
the graveyard.
The one that makes bats, right?
Yeah, and it makes a 1/1 bat, right? Be perfect in this deck, but at the same time, if someone sees that, they're like, well, Marin's all about bringing cards back from your graveyard to like either the battlefield or your hand. So you're going to create a bat every single time. So that automatically makes you target number one.
It's the same reason why there isn't a Grave Pact.
Well, honestly, part of any good EDH deck is trying to make people forget what's threatening about your deck.
Yeah.
And if you're sitting there, like you
you're learning today, forget it by Friday.
But what you said, though, is really true. If you have that Desecrated, I think it's Desecrated Tomb.
Yeah.
if there's bats coming out of the graveyard every time, then suddenly it's really easy to be like, you know, Marin's not the problem. It's the grave that's the problem. If there's no graveyard.
Yeah. And then somebody bajuka bogs you.
This is
a
deck that definitely people who know what they're going up against, there's going to be some sideboard cards that are really going to mess you up in this deck. Definitely your Graft Digger's Cage, your Rest in Peace, things like that.
Graft Digger's Cage is a one cost artifact that creatures can't enter from graveyards.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can't be targets of spells or abilities.
I believe so, yeah. Wow. And then on top of that, you run effects like Rest in Peace, where as soon as something goes in the graveyard, it's exiled instead.
Yeah, Leyline of the Void.
Rest in Peace, Leyline of the Void, and Bajuka Boggs are ones that I was like,
Or if you want to go real cheap, go like Torment's Crypt.
Yeah.
Or Tormod's Crypt. Zero cost, you just tap it and sacrifice it, and all graveyards are exiled.
There's another artifact that does that.
There's a few. There's a few.
Cranial Archive, it exiles all of them. There's the new Ashiok that exiles all of them because it's overly powerful.
Yeah, there's quite a few. There's a lot of potential for that to happen. The thing is, though,
with creature solutions.
Yes, and also I don't think a lot of people, not really, run graveyard.
I do, but that's because
I do in some decks because I use my graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I always at least sideboard it for cards that I know if they're going against a grave heavy strategy will suck.
Yeah.
In honesty though, if somebody Bajuka bogs you, easiest solution: pick up, go to a different table. They don't know.
No big deal, guys.
But like even then, like Bajuka bog is very specific because you have to be in black for that. This is one reason why I always tell people, if you're gonna throw in graveyard hate but you don't want to fill up an
artifact
slot, scavenging ground,
yes,
okay, rare from Hour of Devastation, all right, it tapped for a colorless, but you like you sacrifice a desert, which is itself a desert, and you exile all graveyards.
Great
okay?
card.
It's a great card. No one plays it.
I have never heard of it. Don't run it in a single deck.
I only have two copies, and I run them in my most powerful decks just because I don't want to use that slot for an artifact.
Does it tap for mana?
Yes, it does. One colorless.
Yeah, it does.
It still works. Okay? Yeah. And then you don't have to sacrifice a spell slot. You're sacrificing a land slot, which is not a big deal.
Which would probably have been used for a random non-basic anyway.
What's that?
Or a random basic.
In there that filled. Hmm?
What's that card called?
Scavenging Ground.
Scavenging.
It should be from Hour of Devastation.
I'm just putting that on to the next play this more one. Because I also need to play that
while
more.
We're on the subject,
and it's not expensive.
Recursion, something that I just thought of.
Yeah.
That we should probably mention to everybody.
Oh my God,
is
tell
that
me.
Part of the reason that, like, so really something that's amazing with Marin here is, you get all of these sacrifice triggers, you get value off of the sacrifices, but there's another piece of this that we haven't really mentioned, and that's part of the reason that you're seeing so many huge creatures and creatures with Enter the Battlefield effects.
Because
you keep getting to recycle these creatures, one thing you want to pay attention to is not just huge creatures that are awesome to pull from your graveyard, but
huge creatures
that also splash onto the battlefield
even
and do
small
something.
Creatures
yeah,
with huge
even
abilities.
The small creatures.
So, well,
the ETB effects become recyclable.
One really good example of that.
Just please. The Azoni that we were talking about alone is an ETB. The Undergrowth is still an ETB ability.
Yeah. Exactly.
And just the ability to even get rid of her and just consistently do it to swarm is brutal.
Nasty.
Yeah.
My turn? Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. We're just so excited. So one other good example, in my opinion, is Eternal Witness.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of obvious, but if somebody's milling you or if somebody's making you discard or whatever, so even if you discard non-creature spells, then you can still get them back.
Yeah.
And you can just keep doing it and keep casting stuff and then
just bring back things
constantly. You just don't feel pain.
There's honestly not a green deck that Eternal Witness isn't good in.
Right?
Yeah.
It's such a good card. It is probably one of the best green cards available.
Yeah, and there's certainly not in any deck involving ETB effects that doesn't use it.
It doesn't.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of the main powerhouses in my Chulain deck that I recently built.
My
I love doing that every time.
Chulain.
I run that in Rune as well, Rune of the Hidden Realm.
Excellent. Yeah, Rune is fantastic.
Rune of the Hidden Realm is a fun one.
Oh, he's popular.
I think one other thing that I think we actually talked about this few minutes ago prior to recording, but one fun thing about this deck is that I also have run a few planeswalkers in it because
definitely
it's fun, you know. I think one of like my favorite ones though is the Flip Liliana.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the healer.
Yeah,
heretical healer.
Healer,
and then I think
it's
Defiant Necromancer when she flips,
I believe.
But it's whenever a non-token creature that you control dies, you exile her and flip her, and you also get to create two zombies or one zombie? One zombie.
Put one zombie.
Yeah, but when she flips, she becomes one of the greatest girls in the world. Yeah, Defiant Necromancer. But the thing is, her ult on this one is whenever any creature dies, it comes back to your battlefield.
Yeah. It is a minus -8, so, you know, she has a plus +2 where each player discards a card, and then...
Which is great for you also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the minus X that... I don't know how often people use the minus X.
I've rarely seen it used, to be honest with you. I see people going for the discard effect or proliferating it right up to that 8 and getting it down.
So the minus X is return target non-legendary creature card with converted mana cost X from your graveyard to the battlefield.
I still think that is an awesome effect. Especially in this deck.
But everyone's always trying to race for her ultimate.
Yeah.
But like one thing that's always said in our house is the value...
It's rare that they actually get... to ult.
Yeah.
Because they die by then?
That doesn't happen unless you're playing Oathbreaker. Yeah, let's be real here. You don't see ults going off left and right.
Value of a Planeswalker needs to be the plus and the first minus. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's true. You should not base it on the thing you're never going to get.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you get it.
You get it, yeah. But it's usually when things...
When somebody forgets because there's something bigger happening.
It's either a misplay or they're too distracted by the rest of the board.
Yeah, and I'm not going to bring it up.
Absolutely. Well, it's honestly like trying to build a draw deck and then basing the strength on Enter the Infinite. It's not the card that's seen play ever again.
No.
Now, something to mention, if you guys... So, obviously, you're going to be swarming the battlefield with humongous creatures and stuff like that. One thing that's going to be a little bit of a problem for you sometimes is if you're running against a board state that is humongous as well.
Yeah.
So, if you're running against a token deck or something like that, now, how do you solve that? That's where these creature-based solutions come in, right?
Or Eldrazi Monument.
Yeah. So, like... I mean, there's that, too. But things that I want to mention are things like Butcher of Malakir, Dictate of Erebos, Smothering Abomination. Things where... definitely, the reason that I like Dictate of Erebos is because when you're sacking your creatures for value, you're making them sack creatures as well. Each opponent as well. Yeah.
Plus, it has flash and it's an enchantment.
And it's a flash enchantment, right? So if you have a big board state coming straight at you, you can go, okay, I'm flashing in Dictate of Erebos. I'm sacrificing all of my little nubby dudes and you're sacrificing all of your creatures.
It gets scary.
All of your valuable stuff, too.
Exactly.
Like, if somebody's out there playing something that's, like, big and bonky and scary, like tribal, like, dinosaurs or, like... dragons, like that's something with like high value, high mana cost. So like if you're able to force them to sack, it's extremely hard for them to rebuild.
Yep.
When you look at it, okay, the majority of the Marin decks are out there, regardless of your strategy, it's all about a battle of attrition.
Yeah.
Okay. You want to
small incremental value.
Okay. Sure, you can trade things off 1-1, but you're getting things back for free for most of the time. Okay. You're either bringing them to the battlefield or bringing it back to your hand. So you're getting more resources and you're using up your opponent's resources. So it is a battle of attrition. Okay.
So
and you're
going to
whittle them down.
That like the pain of having to sack doesn't. It doesn't hit.
There is no pain.
There's no pain because you can bring it back and it brings friends.
I like it.
Yeah. And it feels real, real good to sacrifice some rando 1/1 thrall and make somebody else have to sack their one big Voltron hexproof creature they've been putting all their resources on.
It's indestructible.
Right?
That's crazy.
And that's the part that I really like about this deck. If you look at this deck list, you're going to go, wow, there's 34 creatures in here and next to nothing else. And
but there's
you go, so where's all the solutions for everything? And the answer is, they're all on the creatures.
Yeah.
Because
you got a
then
problem
you can
with
recur
an
them.
Artifact or an enchantment? Great.
Use your
Viridian Zealot, sack it and keep doing that over and over again.
Over and over.
You need to prevent combat damage. Like we said before, you can throw in that Spore Frog.
Yeah.
Just fog, if that's your strategy.
Yeah.
Right? And the same thing with Steve. Get lands. That's just it. Is that it comes down to you have a toolkit solution for every small situation on your creatures, and then you have huge splashy plays on the side for all those big board states as
thing I like about your deck list here is that you don't have the typical aristocrat stuff like a Blood Artist, Zootaport, Cutthroat, and everything, because you know what
seer.
It you like in all Falcon Wrath Noble in the end you don't really need them overall because like sure you can drain people and all that stuff, but like you're not killing or sacrificing a lot of creatures. You tend to be doing them one or two at a time, okay? If you're massively destroying things, you're causing like 6-7 damage every single time, sure, throw them in. But like a little drain here and there doesn't really make much of a difference, and you don't really care about the life gain.
And like I said, like it's stuff like that prevents me from becoming as big of a target as I might have in other cases. Like if I was running cards like that, like people are like, if I see Azulaport, I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But you know, like that to me is an automatic target on someone.
Yeah.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
Well, really the place where I see Azulaport and things like that, and part of the reason that I don't think it's on this list is that if you're going that route where you're trying to ping people a little bit and trying to drain people out, you want to go for things less on this side where you're putting huge splashy creatures and more where you're spawning a million, like using infinite combos and mana to summon a whole ton of bodies that you can sack at instant speed,
drain out.
Yeah, and that's the kind of stuff that like I would expect if I saw this.
Exactly.
So then I would think that you're a way bigger threat than like, not to say that this deck isn't a threat, but I'm saying that this deck has a very high win rate.
Well, not even.
Because it's not like.
Yeah, because people aren't, you know.
People are expecting something, they don't see it, and they're like, oh, it's probably fine.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that is exactly that. It's you see Golgari, most Golgari decks are going to be running, like we said, those kind of things. So people tend to save their answers for longer than they should, waiting for, well, when's that Grave Pact coming out? When is the Azulaport combo? Where's the Machias Walking Ballista?
Meanwhile, you've been drained 20 life because a bunch of guys keep dying. Yeah. And you're like, still waiting for that Grave Pact.
Yeah.
It's right there. It's in her hand. I know it.
And it ain't.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there's so many things. Like yours is a very aggressive strategy, which is something I always like. I don't like playing Battlecruiser Magic. So I like going in. I like being aggressive.
Me too. BE aggressive. That's one thing that we for how differently we play. That's probably our greatest like. Commonality.
Yeah, like I'm a blue player, but when I first started Magic, I was a red player.
Yeah.
So it's all
I can see all of that come right back out of you every time you play Annex.
Pure white for me.
I started mono green because it was easy.
Yep, that's a common one. Yeah. That's actually the reason I don't like green right now is because I find
because you played it so much.
Or? No, because when I first analyzed all the colors, to me it felt like green was the quote unquote noob tube. If you will, it's the op of Counter-Strike. It's the one that you just, anybody can put together a certain smattering of big cards and probably win the game.
Green is very beginner friendly.
Yes.
Because there are a lot of mechanics, but they're very digestible mechanics.
Exactly. There's not a whole lot of complex combos.
That's why
this deck was one of
the first ones that I really like went hard into because it had the like ease and familiarity of green with a lot more interesting mechanics from black.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was really cool.
Yeah,
and the Golgari colors are still
Golgari colors are
by far my favorite combination of colors, and I always go back to Golgari.
Well, Golgari has a ton of answers for everything.
Well, I love black, and I need the ramp.
Well,
black fast, and you like black.
Yeah, like black is already really strong because I like the fact that you don't have tutors in here. Thank you, and
I don't need them.
You don't need them for because you're self-milling and everything. Okay?
Well, and it's also like there's not like a single card that's making or breaking this deck.
Yeah,
they're all tutoring for anything. It's like
You could include things like Razaketh. Razaketh would be really strong in this sack tutoring stuff.
Yeah,
it'd be great. But again, like you run such a risk of like just over putting a target on your head.
Not to mention, it's way more expensive for you as the player to tutor through your deck to find something than cast it. Than it is to just tutor through your graveyard, which isn't really tutor. You're just finding what you want and putting it right down.
Yeah.
Slap it on the board and have fun.
Well,
right?
And like I said, like no one card is making or breaking. Like this deck, every single time that this deck has had success, whether or not I win, but like whether every single time that it's been successful, it's been different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a totally different
of huge big creatures to win.
Yeah. But, or lots of little guys.
Just the little guys. Yeah.
You zombie storm all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So.
Ugh, zombie storm. No, thank you. But like you have black. Black is already really, really strong. Okay. Because black uses life as a resource. It's just one of the biggest things. That's the only color that uses life as a resource. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the only problem that black really has is dealing with enchantments and artifacts. But you're playing green, and green is like one of the best at that.
Green's the best.
And that's something I'll mention too, is that even though I absolutely hate mono green, I'll tell you right now that putting green into multicolored decks is a number one. That's the purpose I see for green.
Yeah.
When I see a color that I'm like, this just isn't going fast enough, or it's missing a few
green
things
is
to
like
make
utilitarian.
It get that extra. Yeah, you just green with any color is basically turbo that color.
Yeah.
Green and blue is true. Turbo blue. Green and black is faster black. Yeah. Green and white is faster white. Not that you need that ever.
Green is the
all
gas.
Ever. Yeah. Green is the gas that you add to everything. So I hate using mono green as a strategy, but I love throwing in green, even just as a splash, just to throw a few land searches in there and get myself ahead on board.
Even if you don't do land searches, okay, with green, you still have enchantments that you just enchant dump lands.
Dumping, burgeoning.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and removal options.
Yeah, there's green is the powerhouse when it comes to ramp, okay? Because you can ramp with creatures or enchantments or searching for lands, okay? It's the number one color for color fixing, okay? Absolutely. Minus artifacts, so let's not count that, okay? But that's why it's so strong. Like, one of the things that a deck tech that I gotta throw up still is, like, originally we wanted to do a deck tech for all the kaleidoscopes. And then I got the Reaper King. And I'm like, I don't want to build a five color. I'm lazy. So I built a Reaper King around three colors instead.
Yep.
Because I don't have to. I can still cast the Reaper King with three artifacts, colors. Yep. And then two other, an extra two. No one says I have to build with five.
Yep,
okay,
that's true.
And that's the thing that people have to understand. Just because you have a commander that says, hey, there's four colors here, you don't have to put all four colors in. Just put in three or two or make it mono, even though it's four colors. You have other ways to fix it later on. Who cares?
I think my Kenrith deck runs one black card in it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
you see this in CEDH strategies all the time. CEDH, there's plenty of, like, if you look at most of the top tier competitive EDH decks, you're going to find a lot of partner decks involving four colors, but most of them aren't using, like, an equal amount of symbols in all of those colors.
No,
they might have one or two little toolkit green solutions, and then the rest of it's an Esper deck or whatever, right?
Well, Thrasios and Timna is generally just for the black.
Exactly.
Most people aren't like, I want to put more white cards into my...
No.
You just have the white there in case you need a swords or whatever other things that maybe...
It's a few specific removal options.
Yeah.
Or, like, if you're going for, like, a food chain combo in a deck like that.
And white's the most toolkit removal. It's the most... able to remove all types of permanents at the lowest cost.
Yeah. White is also the best for removal because it is one of the few, it has the most removal that has exile.
Yes.
Okay.
It's finalized.
It's finalized.
Actually, part of what drew me to mono white in the start, I started playing in the original Theros block. And what really drew me initially was mono white with heroic and bestow.
Yep.
Creatures that get bonuses when you enchant them, and then there's also enchantment creatures going on them that come back once the parent creature is destroyed.
Very cool.
And then I had it up, and that was what I liked about it, is that whenever I had problems, I was white, so I just go, okay, well, I've got Revoke Existence, I've got all these other spells
Return
smite
to dust. Yep.
Small little tiny one and two cost spells that don't just get rid of your threat, they completely exile it from the game.
Yeah.
So that's what drew me to mono white at first, was just like, cool, I enchant my heroic dudes and they get super big and great, and then if somebody wants to do something to them, boom, like Revoke Existence, flicker myself, whatever it needs to be, protect myself.
Exile's rough.
Yes.
Yeah, it's so rough.
It's fine.
Exile's like the biggest enemy of this deck, straight up.
Absolutely.
True.
Well, yeah, because you don't want to end up losing any of those creatures at all.
No. Not permanently. It hurts. It really, really hurts. And whenever anything gets removed from the game, it's just, that's it. Like, that's... You really feel it.
But that's the thing with Marin, okay? With Marin, like, you know, you can either, like, sandbag or you can go strong, okay? I don't know about you, Hope, or you, George, or you, Daniel. Like, for me personally, like, if I were... I don't play Marin, but if I were to make a Marin deck, okay? I make it so, so stupid where I'm just like, I have Marin out, and I just be like, I can't
shocked.
Do anything. What? I don't have a Marin deck?
Make it
then he would make a crazy, stupid one that nobody understands, is, I think, what shocks her.
Yeah.
Well, no,
but not really.
Like, the... my goal for this... Okay, if I were to make it, I would make some sort of Rube Goldberg machine out of it, where I'm like, I just bring back all our creatures, then this one would interact with this one, and this one then goes with this, and this
eight
one knocks.
Step long combos.
Don't do that.
Why?
That sounds awful.
That sounds like something
That sounds like me getting up and going to get a snack.
You know, I was trying to work on a deck before it was using white and blue for blinking things, so like, okay, for these four creatures, they all blink a separate creature that would blink at this inner creature, and they would just go back and forth constantly and never ending. And then I'm like, wait, I can't stop this. I would die from stalling. Damn it. So anyways, with Marin, like, you can go so many different ways and whatnot. And we've talked about the sacrifice strategy. We've talked about gold-wide strategies kind of with, like, you know, bringing back in doing a bunch of 1-1s and all that everything. We have Planeswalkers. Talk about defending Marin a little bit.
One thing that I wanted to mention was that with regards to her ability, like one of the best things about it, I think, is that you don't have to wait for it. There's no tap. There's no cost. There's no anything. It just happens.
No, it just first resolves.
Step. Yeah, especially an end step. Yeah, you don't have to wait to untap.
No, it happens on the first time you cast her. It just is. It's part of the life.
A couple of effects you may want to consider shoehorning into your version of the deck.
Yeah,
I kind of thought of as well that we didn't necessarily go for on this list. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, like we said, there's a million ways to build
this
list.
Everybody plays differently.
So if you're if you want to get a little bit more of your value out of the graveyard, self mill strategies work really well. So things like Dredge using Golgari Grave Troll, Dakmor Salvage, Stinkweed Imp are really great examples. Also scoop effects, things that are something that Golgari is a pro at, things like Grisly Salvage and Treasured Find.
Yes.
Mill yourself, find cards that you want, and then throw the rest in the graveyard so
that
you get to take what you want.
And Grisly Salvage is one that I do. One
yeah, Grisly Salvage, I think, is in this one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Treasured Find is one of my favorites.
That was a good one.
Exile this. It's a 2-cost instant. You exile the instant after you've used it, but you get to return target card from your graveyard to your hand.
Yeah.
Instant speed, I believe, and it's 2. 2-cost. Also, Nyx Weaver is one that's one of my favorites. I'm not sure if you've heard of that one. So this is a 3-cost spider, 1 and a black and a green, I believe. It's an enchantment creature. And what he does is at the beginning of your upkeep, I believe you mill 2 cards from your own library.
Yeah, and if you mill
and then when he's in the graveyard, you can also use an effect to pay 3, exile the Nyx Weaver from your graveyard, and return target card from your graveyard to your hand.
That's cool.
Yeah. So you get to feed the graveyard while he's alive, and then while he's dead, he's just a secret thing people always forget about in the graveyard that you can just be like, oh, by the way, I'm taking
this
card from my hand.
Yeah. Even well, that's something that you could even do, like if somebody was trying to get rid of your graveyard, you're just like, well, I'm going to make sure that this doesn't leave.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Specifically.
You know, I just came up with a strategy for Marin. I don't know if it will work, you know, and maybe I'll make a deck to see if this works, but I would build a Marin deck that is pure card discard for everyone.
Yep.
Because if Marin,
you could totally do that.
Because when Marin comes back, I'll just use the second ability where I can just bring a creature card back to my hand. Just sacrifice everyone's resources from their hand so they can't. They need their card draw, and if you're getting rid of that card draw from their hand, they're kind of out of luck, and you're slowly depleting either their resources, like their answers, or their lands.
Graveyard too, yeah.
Yeah, and it's all going to the graveyard. Okay, they might not get the graveyard hate property that they would need. You keep on bringing back stuff, and you keep on restocking your hands. Well, it's not a big deal.
Nope.
Having 10 mana on deck is useless if you have no cards in your hand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Or no card draw. It doesn't matter. So if you keep on forcing them to sacrifice and they're top decking, then it's really, really hard.
It's hard,
and we all know how difficult that is.
Well, that's even last weekend. Like, all of us were playing this big, big commander game. One of those happened again.
No. Half the table was playing a big commander game. The other half were just destroying each other.
The other half of us were top decking.
Yeah.
And we waited until everybody else was done killing each other so we
could start
playing.
Daniel killed everyone!
This is actually part of the reason that my Kuroksa deck is so effective, is that when you throw in the discard, and the discard, you don't feel it. Now all of a sudden, everybody else is losing a whole ton of answers, a whole ton of bombs. You're not scared about it at all, because you're like, some point later in the game, I'm going to get this back. This is no big deal.
Well, that's exactly how I feel about this deck. It's like, I just don't care if you throw stuff into
you
my graveyard, if you do
sweet.
Whatever.
I'll get
it
back later.
It adds a level of, like, you don't have feel consequences the same way.
Yeah.
You know, which is very exciting. Like, sacrifice doesn't matter. Board wipes, I don't care. Like,
well, I'm usually playing creature strategies that I'm always thinking to myself, okay, if a Wrath goes off, is it going to ruin this deck for the rest of the game?
Yeah.
Yes or no? If the answer is yes, I don't want to play this creature strategy. I want to play something that I can throw down what I want, and if it gets nuked, great. That's part of the reason I like Atla Panini. Atla Panini's great for that, because you throw a ton of stuff down, you're begging them to board wipe.
Yeah.
Because if you destroy everything, that's all the dinos
literally,
for me
yeah.
and nothing for you, right? So
the new, have you seen the new Boros Gerard?
No.
Oh yeah, I was actually brewing around that. I have no idea how to build it yet, but I really want to. I feel like there's a lot of loop strategies.
He's the commander in my Boros Soldier deck now.
Yeah.
And the weakness is wiping all those creatures, and he makes them basically killable that way.
Well,
Boros's number one weakness is you got a whole bunch of sweet dudes and they all get wiped.
What does he do?
Oh, he's the first commander that actually functions this way, which is really interesting.
Yes.
He is, when he dies, because dies specifically means exiles. That's why you can't use, like, Glenn Alendra. She doesn't actually go to the graveyard if she's your commander. She goes to command zone.
Yeah.
Gerard specifically goes to your, he goes to the graveyard, dies, and when he dies, you exile him and bring back all permanents that were put, all artifacts and creatures put there this turn.
Oh, yeah. So he dies and you put him back
so
in the
let's say
zone?
You're running a Boros equip strategy. God. This is actually a great example.
Yep.
Let's say you're running a Boros equip strategy. You got a whole bunch of sweet dudes, got some knights, some soldiers, whole ton of sweet equips. Somebody decides to destroy all your artifacts and all your
Nevenero's
creatures that
disc
turn.
Goes off.
You just find a way to destroy your own Gerard and all that stuff's coming back. Yeah. And that and something like that in Boros, it's so reliant
well,
on
they,
board state. That's
the best part is they all die at once, right?
Yes.
So they die at once. He hits at the same time as them. Yeah. He goes to command zone, and you don't have to worry about how to try to reset him. He just goes there.
That's
you get
strong.
Everything back. It is very strong. It's I think he is the best Boros soldier commander.
Oh, yeah.
No doubt about
the
it.
Only
yeah.
good
he's
Boros
one He's one of the best Boros commanders
well,
in general,
well,
I would
say. Well, he's a Boros commander.
Yeah, he's a
there.
Boros one.
Good is subjective.
Good for Boros.
Yeah.
Just
now,
just
back
wait,
to Baron.
Oh yeah,
I had
Squirrels.
A card. I had a card I really liked in this one. That's pretty much a great redundancy effect for Marin. So obviously, we just said Marin has such a good effect that she's going to get targeted a lot. So there's going to be a few times where you just don't have the answers on your creatures there when they need to be, and Marin's going to get removed too much, and you got to go.
Now
okay, well, now what am I going to do without Marin here? Yeah. Well, I've got a card for you that one of my personal favorite Golgari colored cards, actually it might be the favorite Golgari colored card, 6 cost enchantment called Dead Bridge Chant. Dead Bridge Chant's effect reads, I believe, at the beginning of your upkeep, return target creature from your graveyard to the battlefield at random. So you basically separate out all your creatures, fan them out, and get somebody to
You know what would also be dope about
you.
That? If it's at the upkeep, you just get to do it twice a turn. So upkeep and end step, just bing bang.
Well, that's just it. If
whatever
you, have
you
both
don't
Marin
hit with the
and
random.
This, now you're just getting double of that recursion effect, double the ETB effect with large creatures. It's huge.
Hope had Deadbridge Chant in it, but she just wasn't playing it enough. That's one of the, it's one of the ones she removed for...
Yeah, a lot of people find it a little bit too slow. I find the way to make Deadbridge Chant work is that you need to get it out way early with lots of things that are small in the graveyard so that people like start having to do that effect every time. Or, like, just it, making sure that you target the right things so that there's huge spots.
It is good in a self-mill strategy, too, though.
Absolutely,
yeah, it's fantastic for that.
Yeah, if you're leaning more in that self-mill direction, you decide to go dredge with this deck, something like that, definitely Deadbridge Chant and things like that become much more relevant.
Deadbridge Chant is a powerhouse in my Mimeoplasm deck.
Yes.
It's so good to be able to get them back.
Yeah, absolutely. Not to mention that the best part about it is that it's at random, and I love at random effects because usually the way that I do it is I pull my stuff out and I get, I fan it out.
Pick
and
a card.
I get one of my opponents to choose.
Now
the
it's their
effect.
Fault.
Now it's on them. So when they when they pick the Lord of Extinction out of your hand, that ends the game for them. That feels so great.
Well,
and it also like redirects
the aggro.
Like people are just like so they're just like, oh, well, you play this. I'm like, I didn't pick it. Sherman did.
Yeah,
it wasn't
Kill
my
him.
Fault. It was Deadbridge's fault. And
it's always my fault.
And
I don't
like,
care.
You know what?
I don't mind.
You know what? She's right. We should kill Sherman.
I would say if you're going to do this, just run Phage in the deck so that you can always have that sense of danger. Deadbridge Phage back.
I like to live on the edge. What can I say?
It's like the silver bullet. No, no, no. Oh, no. Kryptonite. Kryptonite in the deck. Like, please don't get Phage out. Oh,
please no.
You just,
please no.
I
please
died
no.
now.
Yeah, pretty much.
I only died by my own hand.
Now, some similar commanders that you may want to investigate if Marin is not quite your flavor. If you want to go in the mono black direction, Yawgmoth. Absolutely an amazing new card for that. He's got 3 different sacrifice abilities stapled onto him. Now, he's much more of a combo heavy deck. I find him more of a suggestion for the advanced players out there.
Yeah.
There's also Muldrotha. We had we just had Daniel mention Muldrotha. Muldrotha's fantastic. I almost entirely switched my Sultai strategy. I run a Sidisi self mill deck. That's actually another one of the suggestions I have here. If you want to go in the tricolor direction, and you really like that idea of the dredge and throwing your own stuff in the bin so that you can get it later, Sidisi's amazing because she not only is really good at self milling you, but at the same time she gets value off of it. So every creature you're throwing in there, not every creature, but whatever
the majority
goes in there when you self mill, you're going to get a zombie out of it, and you can. I bought tribal zombies with her. I just basically mill the heck out of myself, get a bunch of zombies, and throw a bunch of zombie lords down and get going, right?
Yeah. So
that's a similar one as well.
Well, I do like the idea as well of when we're doing deck techs, just talking about things that are similar commanders, because maybe you like a bunch of what's going on in a Marin deck, but Marin's still not really your specific flavor. You don't like the experience counters. You don't like that. It is neat to know that there's other options available. It's not just Marin with this.
Well, like maybe you want a splash of blue, you know?
Yeah, so like Caridor.
You want to play. Yeah, like who knows like what your specific style is.
You're Brian. You need a Rhystic Study in there.
You want to play Scarecrow.
But like,
well, sometimes it's the effects. Yeah. Yeah. That you're drawn to, not necessarily the person.
Oh, yeah. And it's stuff like that, like where
if you want to be a parrot, similar.
You can take some mechanics and some style from a deck like this and kind of twist it to your own kind of play style. You know,
evilness.
Yeah, like there are options to kind of exactly.
Every mechanic, like any mechanic you like in this game, because there was so much history and so much cards. There's guaranteed to be a few different commanders, except for very specific mechanics.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, we didn't have a true madness commander until we got Anya, right? But, like, you could do things that included madness back in the day, right? But there's other strategies, like, you know, just about every single type of strategy, creature strategy, token strategy, if you like, plus one counters, whatever it is.
There's
at least 5 to 10 great commanders you can pick from, all similar but in different ways.
Yeah, there's so many out there. And like it's just like as long as you're not playing competitive, because competitive is very, very straightforward. Limited.
Much smaller.
Yeah, there's a lot of interaction. You have a lot of instances and everything. Like when someone's playing a prosh, you know what's going to come out. You got to get rid of the food chain, stuff
or
like that.
So you think,
Daniel. I definitely have to say it. It's Angie. It's Angie, not Anya.
I wasn't going to break. You broke. No.
I've never seen a European name, A-N-J-E, that is not pronounced
but
Anya.
Wizards of the Coast said.
It is Angie.
And Wizards of the Coast is wrong, and they need to learn
They can be wrong. They can be like, they can be like wrong
I'm
against like,
Anya.
But they're, it's also not from Europe. It's from the world of Magic of the Gathering.
The pronunciation of the card
but it's
is
very
Angie.
Obvious what it's evoking.
I just want to... let's not mention this to Brian. Let's see how long it takes him to listen to this and freak out in the Discord. Like, yo, guys, it's Angie, not...
I don't care what anybody says.
Yo, you can say whatever you want.
That's the fun.
But you're wrong.
Fair enough.
So George is never being invited back.
No, welcome to
don't
the club.
Don't talk about madness, commanders.
Welcome to the club.
No, actually, though, I do really, really like her. I think she's dope.
I almost went for
whatever
her
name is. I'm all about her.
I almost went for her myself, but Kroxa got announced the day I was deciding to build a Rakdos deck, and that just stole my heart. I wanted to go for that escape mechanic. So
yeah. That deck of yours is really cool, by the way.
Yeah, it's something so everybody good. Expected to suck, because they were like, you're exiling your graveyard? You're an idiot. And it's like, well, not necessarily, because I filled my graveyard with my hand I just wheeled, along with all of your guys' hands you just wheeled.
Yeah.
So I've always got that room. I've got those 5 cards to escape with almost every turn.
Well, it's like we mentioned before when we were first going through the Pharaoh's spoiler scenario thing, you know, like... There's a lot of mixed opinions on escape, and we're all in agreement. Like, we talked about it, and we're like, okay, like, look, escape is a great mechanic because it forces anyone that doesn't really know how to use the graveyard as a resource to actually use it as a resource for once. You know, it's great for beginners.
It's instructional. Yeah,
exactly.
It's a good way to dabble in graveyard recursion and any of that.
Getting used to using your library to mill and everything, look for resources that way. It's fantastic for that. So, and the fact that you made an EDH deck around that is fantastic. You know, it goes to show that, you know, if you put your mind to it, you can make almost anything happen. And I say almost because if you look at the old legendary creatures back from, like, you know, legends and everything, they're really, really rough.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
I was going to say, like, you could even smatter in some escape in a deck like this if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, exile things like sorceries and instants and stuff that, like, you're not necessarily bringing back, like, that isn't going to hurt as much. Even, like, creatures that you're just like, I'm just not going to deal with this game.
Yeah.
Like, you can do whatever you want. Like, that is another option. Like, if you wanted to, you can smatter some escape.
I would use it as a bluff. Yeah. Because, like, people would be like, you know, like, if I was playing Marin and I was using escape to, like, exile things from a graveyard, someone would be like, oh, I'm going to, like, Bajuga Bog you. It's like, why? I only have 3 cards left, okay?
Yeah.
I could put more in there. Why don't you choose that other person that has, like, 20 cards in their graveyard? That's a better thing.
Yep.
Sure, this is my strategy, but I only have 3 cards left. Yeah. I can't do anything. And then it'll be like, yeah, okay. Like, 50-50 chance that they will still target you, mm-hmm. you know? But, like, most people, if you're a non-experienced player or, like, you're playing against people that aren't that as experienced, okay, they would rather go for value.
Yeah.
Okay. And the value is they're going to target someone that has 20 cards in their graveyard, even though they might not have a single card or graveyard recursion card in their whole deck.
Yeah.
They'll still target them just because it's better value than yours, where you only have 3 cards. Well, you bring back stuff.
To know better perceived value.
Yes. Yeah. They don't know.
So, now, that actually brings me into something, too, like just moving a little bit away from escape and just into graveyard strategies in general. One thing, and this applies to Marin, too. I do this in my Kroxa deck all the time. So, as we just mentioned, escape gives you a really good kind of instructional thought modality of paying attention to your graveyard. What's in my graveyard? How many cards are in my graveyard, and when can I use them?
Yeah.
So something that I've really been doing a lot with Kroxa is, one thing I see a lot of people do when they have to pay attention to their graveyard, if they've got flashbacks, things like that, they'll take the cards that that are reusable from the graveyard. Put them on the top so they remember, oh yeah, I have that thing. Yeah. Here's the problem.
Everybody else remembers.
Yeah.
I know. Yes.
So stop doing that.
Stop doing that.
I leave my Kroxa right underneath all my other cards. Now, that said, I've got it sleeved in a different colored sleeve, so I still remember it's there. But even without that, I always make sure I'm constantly keeping track in my own head without picking up my graveyard pile, because that's another thing. Magic's kind of similar to poker in that sense. You're reading other people's movements, you're reading their tells. When somebody goes and picks up their graveyard and they start shuffling through every turn, they're looking for something, right? Or they're reminding themselves.
I'm thinking about it. I'm doing, like, right? You have to, there's a level of bluffing and a level of you don't want to count your chickens, so to speak, you know, like, because that's exactly it. That's something that I used to do when I first started playing this deck. When I started playing this deck, not only was I new to the deck, but I was new to the game.
Yeah.
Right.
I constantly did that, and I
totally get it, you know. And 100%, I will say that Daniel cut me a lot of slack when we were first starting to play, because he definitely didn't just start
And that's the way you welcome a new Magic player.
Totally. Yeah, you got to be nice. But now that I'm looking back at it, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I can't believe I did that.
Like, if you want to be a better Magic player, okay, as time goes on, you want to learn to remember things, okay? Slowly, okay? And that comes down to paying attention, being part of the game, okay? When you do that, you start to remember things more and more and more often, okay? You start remembering triggers, start remembering other people's triggers.
Like, it sounds so simple, right?
It sounds simple, but it takes a long time to develop.
Totally. And sometimes you got to train yourself, too. Yeah. I know with me, I almost, for the longest time, I used to never remember triggers on my upkeep until I heard somebody start doing the whole put a little token on top of your deck, like just a little crystal or something on the deck, a dice on top of your deck, so that you can go like, Tyrone has his trigger, that's why I put it there.
I can't draw yet.
But that helped me train myself to start thinking of that. Yeah. And then, like I said, with my Kroxa strategy, now I've got all those things in my mind. Yeah. So I know when they're in the graveyard, so that when I pull out that response, I go, I got a response in the graveyard. They go, what?
Yeah.
And you go, I got that thing, remember?
Well, and that's exactly, I didn't, because it's not
on the top of your graveyard.
Yeah. That's exactly like my Marin deck. It's like, I know what's in it. Like, the whole time, I know what's in my graveyard at any given time. Like, as soon as it hits the graveyard, it's locked and loaded.
Yeah.
Like, ready to go. Like,
and I would say that's the first part you want to work on when you're getting familiar with a deck is, know what I do the best and how I do it, and then after you've mastered that, then you start looking around the table. What what we were just mentioning before here is that, you know, start to learn the ticks of the other players. Yeah. Start to learn how they bluff. Start to learn what they do when they're looking for a spell, when they're looking for
like
an answer.
Like, one thing that I know that Sherman does is he shuffles his hand.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's a constant hand shuffler. Yeah. I never do that.
I do that because, like, I always look at it again to remind myself what I do have and everything, right?
Yep.
Because it's not like, okay, this is this position, whatever. I constantly do that. I also constantly try to remember other people's triggers, and I'll remind them of those triggers. Because that actually helps me remember
for things. Yourself.
Yeah.
Well, and also it almost makes you seem like a pal. Like, it makes you seem like
which is
like
one of the reasons why I can get rid of...
I also remind people of their triggers.
I mean, I've always said this about myself. I'm like Goku when it comes to magic. I don't want to lose to you because you forgot a trigger. Okay. I want to let you get into your super ridiculous form and then beat you at that form.
Well, that
because
also,
if I can beat you at the top, then there's like that's how
it.
I know
that's
I won.
One of the reasons like I think Daniel wants to touch on.
Yeah, one of the things I like to do is I like to tell people what they miss at the end of the game because there's you don't want to tell people how to do it their own way in the game. You want to let everyone see how
play
they can get
game.
To it.
Yeah.
But at the end, if you are noticing people aren't missing triggers or maybe misunderstanding a card, really good example is Multani. I'm not good at reading.
Yeah.
So I always forget that it's 1/1 for each card in play and graveyard, not just graveyard.
Yeah.
So Hope killed me with that one. And then also was like, oh, by the way, it has reach, just so you know.
Yeah. Which is like, you know.
It happens.
Like, because Daniel's an experienced player, you know, it would be one thing if it was like a new player, be like, hey, like, your card does this. Like, you can kill me.
Yeah.
You know, like...
That's usually how I go with new players.
Yeah,
for sure.
But for Daniel, like, he should have read it. That's his fault.
Yeah.
Like, he's...
That's how I approach experience
it's
kind of...
Game. Yeah, it's kind of feeling it out. Or even yesterday, like, I was playing my Atraxa deck, and I had infinite turns.
Yeah.
And
Easy to do.
But I usually don't. But I had infinite turns twice, because I had Sage of Hours and the Mage Sage
Decker. I love that Sage of Hours.
So
man, that was a fun standard deck.
I had double infinite turns forever.
Oh, yeah.
And that was just what it was. But, like, I was still trying to, like, because it's a lot.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
And I played that deck a lot, but, like, it was, like, especially endgame, like, I literally ran out of dice, and I had to
it's
use
so
other
much work.
People's dice.
Yeah.
So I was just trying to check everything, count everything, and I was like, oh, my God, like, there's so much proliferation and double counters here. And Daniel's like, you have infinite turns. Like, I was like, what? And he's like, this, ding, 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 ding. He's just like, so can you, like, basically to the other players, like, can you stop her right now? Because if you can't,
then it's game over.
It's game over. You're never getting another turn.
Yeah.
You have 2 blue mana. Can you stop it? No?
Okay. No countersmile or anything like that? Or boomerang? Or
Well, I had, like I said, I had 2 infinite turn triggers, right? So, like, I was in a place that, like, I'm pretty sure he could get rid of the creature, but
it wouldn't make no difference.
Usually with triggers too, especially with new players, I just kind of 3-strike it. So I'll let them fail at it a couple times without mentioning anything. And then like the 3rd or 4th time, I'll be
like
by the way, like last 2 turns, you could have done this. Start doing it now before you lose.
And essentially, like the reason that Daniel had mentioned that was because like I would have gotten there, but it would have taken forever.
Yeah.
Exactly, like to roll everything up and roll it down and attack and roll everything up and roll it down. It's just like
it wouldn't have been enough.
It's like, let's just move on to the next game. Like you won.
Yeah. The good thing about all of this though is what I personally like is that it starts with this discussion amongst players.
Yes.
Like what are the rules are, like how you interact. I dropped in and I was playing someone else's deck.
Yeah.
Because I had to just go in and out. I was waiting for the Adrian to come in because I had to talk to him about a few things. So I borrowed someone else's deck. And, like, we got into a large discussion because the way I piloted his deck, he's never seen before.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's just, like, you know.
I remember him saying that at the end. He was like, I've done this deck, but this was piloted by a better pilot. Like,
yeah.
He used my deck, but I'm impressed with the way you did this.
And, like, we started discussions, like at one point in time, because, like, he was playing the Morph Commander.
Yeah.
From the 2019 precon.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name. Kadena,
I believe.
Yeah.
Slinking Sorcerer.
Yeah. So, like, I had a
maybe.
So, I had a bunch of morph
things. Might be Kama in there or something.
Yeah. I had a bunch of morph things on the table and everything, and I had mana up because, you know, they let me have the Seaborn Muse out.
Why?
Suckers.
Why would they do that?
Because they were tapped out and I was waiting for it. I was waiting for it so bad. So, but, like, he tried to Cyclonic Rift, overloaded. And I'm like, okay, I'll copy that spell. And he's like, okay, so you bounce one thing. I'm like, no. You paid for the overload cost. When I copy it, I'm copying the overload. He's like, give me an example. It's like, well, if you choose something like where it has an option, like choose two. A mode of a spell. If I copy that, I'm copying a mode. I cannot choose which mode.
Yeah.
Same thing here, you know? So it starts a discussion on that stuff, right? So, like, yeah, we cyclonic rift the whole board, and he's like, he had omniscience out. So, but in response to all of that stuff,
Did you take it?
No, I destroyed it. Oh. So you couldn't cast omniscience.
Just as good.
You know, so like, you know, so he had to go to discard. Like, he eventually won because like he had extra turns and everything. Yeah. Like,
but
you know.
But it's still interesting. Like, there are even things like the responding to proliferation, which is something that we discussed yesterday.
Yeah.
Which was, can you? And you can. But like, this was like a discussion that we had because like there was a disagreement about it because of the way that it's worded.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting, you know, like whether or not you can target it, whether or not you can target it when it's got pro, like how all of that works. And that was really cool. Like, to see, it's always interesting. And I feel like it happens every single Friday that like everybody gets into a discussion about
something, mechanics.
Well, it's such a complex game with so many mechanics and rules, but B, interactions between those rules.
Well, yeah. And specifically with Commander, it's interactions that never were supposed to happen.
Yeah. Well, literally, the Magic creators themselves, plenty of them have said, like, the way that this game works is that you have this, I think this is what lends to its longevity, is that you have one set of rules, and that every single card in this game breaks those rules in some way, in some magnitude.
Yeah. Well,
and the more it breaks the game, the more of a, generally the more rare and the more powerful and whatever it is, right? But the idea here is that usually you're paying a cost with the land to subvert some rule of the game in some way and spin it to your advantage.
Well, even look at like just the base level of the game, like the speeds you can cast things, instant speed, sorcery speed.
Yeah.
A Grand Abolisher stops instant speed. It changes the rules of when things can be played and how things
can
be played.
Another reason I love Mono White.
So yeah.
And that's something that's so simple, but it makes such a huge difference. If somebody's playing an Is It deck, you probably just ruined it.
Yeah. I always ruin stuff like that.
So.
Well, like, and that's the thing.
You kept a hand for the Leyline of Anticipation? That's crazy.
Yeah. But like, you always have these things. Like, I have the biggest conversation every single time when I play my Anafenza deck, and when I actually get my combo off, people always start trying to rule lawyers me, because my Anafenza wins by using split second.
Yeah.
And then I sacrifice things.
Seen that before, yeah.
Yeah, I sacrifice things to add, like, Ashnos Ulcer or a mana generator of some sort.
Yeah.
And then I have a bunch of death triggers and reanimate triggers. And they're like, split second says you can't put stuff on the stack. No. You cannot put spells or activated abilities on the stack.
Triggered
abilities still work. And then, other times,
that's interesting, because I would probably have the exact same discussion and be like, you can't do that, split second, and you'd be like,
every single time, I always have this conversation, okay? The split second specifically says, you cannot cast spells or use activated abilities that will add to the stack.
The fact that it specifies activated abilities means that it would have specified triggered abilities.
Yeah, or someone will...
Or say any... You know?
Yeah, or someone will, if I'm not ready, someone will cast something that whisper a second, and I'll wait for that spell to resolve. Once that spell's resolved, I add to the stack again. They're like, you can't do that. Like, you can't add stuff to the stack. I'm like, the spell with the split second already resolved.
You're like, the stack is empty. This is a new stack.
It's not even the stack is empty, okay? So, like, let's say I have, like, spells.
It's just the reading of the rules. It's read.
Yeah, so it's like, I have three spells, and then the fourth spell, someone casts something that has split second.
It resolves.
Once it resolves, I have the three spells still.
Yeah.
Now but I can react to it again.
Yeah, that's no longer on the stack.
So it's just little things like that people don't consider. Because, like, when people see split second, they're like, okay, nothing can be added. That whole thing has to resolve. Like, no, the spell has to resolve. You can add stuff to the stack after that spell has resolved.
But that, I think, really falls back onto the fact that the stack is complicated.
But that's one of the best things in Magic.
True.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I think we're way past time. And we went off on a huge tangent there.
I guess what we're all summing up to here is that make sure you discuss with other players what they play in their decks, what they liked about yours, what they didn't like about yours, what they would advise you change.
Oh, well, and you want to play
Mirror. Having that discourse with each other is really, really important for developing your play strategy.
I also think that even using this exact podcast as an example, is you're going to learn about cards that you've never heard of.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. Like, there's always going to be a player that's been around longer than you. There's going to be players that play totally different cards than you because you kind of get stuck in your meta sometimes.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to kind of like broaden your horizon. So yeah. I would say to that end, thank you for listening, guys. Please feel free to check out our social media, our Discord, and let us know A, how you'd build this deck, if there's other decks that you run that
are really similar.
Crush some graveyard recursion, because
how do you like to play from the grave?
Your favorite Golgari cards in general? Things you would add?
Let's,
all of them?
Yeah, all of them. Of course. Anyways, thanks for listening, guys. Bye.
Cheers. Catch you later.